Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello. Welcome to the princes that were promised. And we are continuing season 3 of HBO's Game of Thrones. We spoke to the episodes, to the narrative of season 3 last week, and today we will speak to the characters of season 3. And first off, John, would you say the characters of season 3 were better or worse than the characters for season 2? I know we had a lot of the same characters, but overall, more engaged in the characters in season 3 or less so?
That's a good question. You know what? I was more engaged, I think.
Yeah, I think I agree. Even though the episodes seemed like they were worse, you were more engaged in the characters because you knew them better from being this far on the journey with them. But how about the new characters?
Mira, Jojen.
Yeah, Mance Rayder.
Mance Rayder, Tormund.
Tormund.
Ygritte. Darius Nahara. Nahara.
Would you call Ygritte a new character?
No, she was in season 2.
The only one episode, though, right? Or two episodes?
No, just a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Ramsay.
Ramsay's a new character. Roos has gone from minor to straight supporting character. So then just of the new characters.
Elena Tyrell.
Okay, yeah, Elena Tyrell. Which one do you enjoy the most? Which new character?
The new characters?
Just the ones we have not seen before. Jojen, Mira, Ramsay, Elena Tyrell, Tormund, Mance.
Tormund.
Based on what he's done.
Right.
Following.
I can't pick Ramsay because it's Ramsay.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Jojen and Mira in the show. No. I like them in the book, not so much in the show.
I think Elena Tyrell did a really good job.
Right. She.
I might go with her.
You seen her way back when?
No.
When she was like 25 years old.
Oh, she hot?
Yeah. Smoke show.
Yo, Helen Mirren when she was younger.
Who?
Helen Mirren.
Who's that?
She's another British actress. Like, she's an older lady now. She's still hot now, but like, she's really hot back in the day. Do you know who's like the hottest ever? It's fucking Kim Basinger. She was like so hot.
Yeah, you know who's still hot to this day? I guess it's probably, I don't know, there's a lot of makeup involved or surgeries, whatever, but Chrissy Brinkley is still.
Really?
Oh my God.
I don't know if I've seen a picture earlier. Yeah.
She was my first ever crush. It's called Chrissy Brinkley.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I loved her. I was big into tennis way back when. I used to love tennis.
Like Chrissy Brinkley?
I mean, that's Steffi Graf, actually.
No, oh.
It's getting late here in that for New York. It's getting late. Like, Steffi Graf was also one of my first. She was like top three.
Not Steffi Graf, but Jennifer Capriati.
I was never a big fan of hers.
Oh, dude. Her and Monica Salles did always have those matches.
Yeah, and Monica Salles was like,
what? Why?
Yeah, it was like, come on, please. I mean, the guys never did that. Like, and they're like, but I used to always like female tennis better than male tennis.
Really?
Because of the volleying. I just could never stand male tennis.
Plus, it was only 3 sets. So you didn't get these 5-hour matches. Yeah.
It's like every time, you know, it's like boom, spike, you know, or boom, before, you know, hit back, fall.
You're more likely to get a really close, good women's match.
Hit back, volley, run, you know, backhand, forehand, backhand. I like the back and forth and good challenging points.
Dude, but that being said, if you get a good male tennis match, which I haven't watched in years, but I'm thinking back like when Sampras and Agassi were in their prime. Mm-hmm. Even what's the kid's run where he won the US Open after Agassi retired, and then he never did anything else since then. He was going out with Mandy Moore. When you get a good male match, it blows away women's matches, but they're so infrequent. Whereas women's matches, you often get good matches. How do we get on the subject of women's tennis?
It was me. I tried to think that Chrissy Brinkley was a tennis player before we can.
It's late. It is late. We're killing ourselves for you guys because we want to get you our thoughts and observations on season 3. Daisy, what are you eating?
She's like, who, me?
Oh, it's just another dog. She's one of the other dogs. Yeah, that's cool. Whatever. Season 3, going back to our formula, which is as follows, and my theory is that this will work every season. Furthermore, my theory is that this will work in every single dramatic TV show ever. It I just think it will. You have a character that represents the status quo on that show, and Game of Thrones, a character that represents the status quo of Westeros. You have a protagonist who is working to keep the status quo as is, and you have an antagonist who's working to keep this, who's working to disrupt the status quo. You have a real threat from the outside who is not in your immediate line of sight, but you know that they're there, and you have an existential threat who you do not know that they're there, but they are a huge threat to the status quo. We have a character that represents chaotic good, who is not accounted for, unplanned for, unexpected, but when they show up, they do it for the good of the realm, for the good of the status quo. And you have a chaotic evil character who is quite the opposite, unplanned for, unexpected, and when they show up, they do things that are for the detriment of the status quo. All that said, which character in season 3 of Game of Thrones do you feel represents the status quo of Westeros? Westeros post the Battle of the Blackwater. Post. Well, yeah, not really post War of the Five Kings, but pretty much post War of the Five Kings. I put
Tywin Lannister.
Yeah, I put Tywin Lannister also. And he is working for, he may have Lannister's self-interest at heart, but he's working for the good of the realm. He always meant to. He may be an evil man, but he takes his job seriously. Because he has the knowledge, the wisdom, the foresight to see that you can't not care. You can't not make the realm work because we all live here. And winter is coming. So, Tywin Lannister is the status quo. Now, as far as protagonists and antagonists, I'm actually not quite sure. I have a good idea. But
well, I'm
going to
say protagonist Robb Stark.
Okay, why? Now, keep in
he's
mind...
He's still trying to fight. He's making mistakes. Let's leave the mistakes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the guy that, in this realm, that we're looking at as Stannis was defeated. Lannister is still in charge. We still have Robb. Robb is still our guy. Robb can still do something. He's an idiot. He's a Tully. They don't understand that, but he's still the guy you're rooting for. We know Jon is at the North. We know he's not going anywhere anytime soon. Robb is the protagonist.
Okay, I would agree with you, and you actually did make me change one of my answers. I would agree with you, except that in this instance, the protagonist is fighting for the status quo, where Robb is not. He's fighting against Tywin. That's literally driving all of his actions right now, is revenge for his father, Tywin Lannister, Joffrey. And I think with that in mind, I think I'm making Robb Stark the antagonist. He's a good guy. I know he's a good guy. And I know that right.
Who's your protagonist then?
I think I have to go with Tyrion again. Because I can't say it's Tywin unless I say that Joffrey's the status quo and that Tywin's the protagonist.
I think I guess I'm just a little off on this. My antagonist, I just switched to Littlefinger.
Okay, why? No, there's no wrong answer.
I just feel as if you didn't know, now you know. That whole entire black cast is a lot of thing. You know he's going to do things and continue to do things that's going to be better for him, but in turn, mess other people up.
That's a good one. And I might agree with you, except that I think more likely for that to be the case in a later season.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think he's revealed his plan. I don't think everybody knows he's the antagonist. Like, the antagonist, everybody knows. The way I'm looking at it is the status quo, the protagonist knows. They can identify who this antagonist is. And the status quo being Tyrion or Joffrey, protagonist being Tyrion or Tywin, they know that Robb Stark is their biggest threat right now. And the climax of season 3 being the Reigns of Castamere, the Red Wedding, defeating their antagonist. And that's how I'm looking at it. Another way I wanted to go, I was thinking, was Tyrion the protagonist, Cersei the antagonist. But they both want House Lannister to win. Another way I was looking was Cersei the protagonist and the Tyrells the antagonist. But I think that might be
later
on. Yeah.
That's season 5.
Which character represents chaos in a good way? Chaotic good.
I guess I'll agree with you, Arya, I guess.
Right, and my point being that Arya is a wild card. Nobody thinks that she's alive. And where she shows up to the benefit of what's good for the realm. She shows up and it's good for the Brotherhood Without Banner. She shows up and she saves Jenji, she saves Hot Pie from Harrenhal, even though they don't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she shows up and she actually helps the Hound. She's called an Angel of Death, but she helps the Hound become a better person in a way. We don't see that in season 3, but
she's laying the groundwork.
Now, Chaotic Evil, I had originally thought, if I'm saying Arya, then I'll say the Hound is Chaotic Evil, but I don't look at the Hound as an evil guy. So, for me, for Chaotic Evil, I'm going to go with Roose Bolton, because he's causing chaos.
I'm going with Walt the Frey.
Okay, all right. Because that may be better.
Because, you know what, although we don't see him until episode 9, you do during the season...
Walt he hangs heavy.
We have these people, Walt the Frey. We need Walt the Frey's man. We need Walt the Frey.
Mm-hmm.
And behind the scenes, he's a schemer planning all this stuff that's going to create a whole entire evil towards what I call my protagonist, season 3, Robb Stark.
Meanwhile, in terms of the status quo, the Lannisters, Roose Bolton isn't really evil to them. He helps them out a lot, but so does Walt the Frey. So if you think about it in those terms, I might have to say I like Walt the Frey. I like that answer, but I think in terms of who the status quo is, I think I might say Chaotic Evil is Brotherhood Without Banners. Guerrilla warfare against the Lannisters, supply lines. It's tough. Tough season to do this to. It does work. It can work. Now, existential threat, real threat, I had said that we could just keep going, Jon and Dany.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, for what I define as the real threat and the existential threat. I called Daenery and Jon the real threat, the existential threat, when Robert Baratheon represented the status quo. And then last season, Cersei and Joffrey represented the status quo when it was still the same thing.
I think I have a feeling where you're going to go on this. You up with the Tyrells?
Yeah, Tyrells for a real threat. And I think
that's why Tywin's going to butter up to them.
Right. Tywin sees that, and that's why he's trying to deal with it and turn them from a threat. And then for existential threat, Jon is an existential threat, but he's beyond the wall right now. I think Daenerys becomes the existential threat because Viserys is dead, so they underestimate her, and then it's only later on that Joffrey hears about the dragons, and she's a world away. I'd say she's more of an existential threat, and the Trolls are more of a real threat. So keeping this in mind, I mean, Robb Stark won't be an antagonist for season 4 because he's eliminated. The protagonist wins. You know what? I'm not going with Tyrion. Tywin is my protagonist. Joffrey, Cersei are still the status quo. Even though Tywin's running the realm, running the day-to-day, he serves at the pleasure of the king.
So Theon's <it's> like... I love memes.
Dude, I love the fucking... And for everybody listening at home, I can't get enough of this Star Wars prequel memes. Do you follow that on Reddit?
No, I...
Oh my god, dude, it's so fucking awesome. It is so awesome.
I can't take the Star Wars prequel hate anymore. It's just
no, it's not, dude. That's the thing. It's not Star Wars prequel hate at all. It's Star Wars prequel love, and it's making everybody that follows it just like enjoys the movie more. When you run out of ideas for Jedi Council characters, you know, let's just put a wig on Yoda. Because like, I hate sand, it's coarse. It's just, yeah, I can drop in sand. How about your doctor? This is the best.
Why is he this way?
Yeah, is that the one that we do?
Is that what we say?
Isn't that an absolute dude? You know what the fuck hurts? Yeah, prequel memes is the fucking best, man. It's the best Reddit. Everybody home, prequel memes is the best subreddit out there. I love prequel memes. Let's go back to season 3 for a minute. Let's pretend we just finished watching season 3. Season 4 is not going to air for another year. Do you remember what you were looking forward to about season 4? We covered the first 2/3 of Storm of Swords, season 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say. What were you looking forward to with season four?
Shock moments from a wedding.
Okay.
Wanted to see the Oliver Martell. I wanted to see if they were going to bring Oliver Martell into the fold.
Right.
And I think I was waiting for Jon Snow to get killed.
Really?
Because I just wanted to see the at that point reaction. I wanted
to see the reaction
you know, of YouTubers and all that. I get a big kick out of the reaction videos.
Well, all right. So being
that, but I knew that was 2 years away, though. I knew that was.
Yeah, but I mean, it's something you look forward to.
For the next.
Right. Season 1, 2, 3. Now that we're done with the first kind of half of the series, I think I know what you're going to answer, but what do you think is the biggest shock moment? Do you think it's the Reigns of Castamere, or do you think it's Ned's beheading in Baelor? Think about it in terms of as a first-time viewer of this show. Looking back, I mean, it's, you know, Rob's mistakes were obvious.
Although how obvious it was that Sean Bean was the actor, when I was still watching it, I didn't even put two and two together. But mostly the way he does and everything he does, I still think there's no way they're killing off the main protagonist in season one. Someone's coming in there for a save, for a distraction,
right?
Something. I'm gonna still say Ned Stark. Only because watching the show, you can kind of pick up on mistakes Rob made by kind of seeing him getting killed.
And then once he starts talking about an alliance with the Freys, it's like, okay, what?
Are you a half
a moron? Yeah, you totally burned them. What are you talking about? And Catelyn's like, yeah. Oh, that's a good idea, yeah.
Show them how it feels to lose someone they love. Okay, Catelyn.
Once you get the Freys back, show them how it feels to lose someone you love. All right, Mom.
God. Thank you, Mom.
Well, I mean, if you think about the two shock moments, the Ned shock moment is built more on narrative. Like, it's almost like a Red Wedding. It's like a repeat of Baelor, except it's dialed up. Mm-hmm. Instead of one character, it's two characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's extra violent. It's betrayal by his own people. But it's a lot, you're right, it is a lot easier to see coming than Baelor. Baelor takes you by surprise because the people you consider the bad guys are saying, we'll send him to the wall. Nobody's looking to take his head off except for this little runt kid who at that point in time hadn't really flexed his royal muscle, so to speak. You know, he hadn't made any proclamations or made any decisions for people to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think Ned is the bigger shock, even though the Red Wedding is considered the greatest shock in television history. But I will say that the Red Wedding was probably, and maybe not, what I was going to say was the Red Wedding probably led to the biggest increase in book readers.
Probably, yeah.
But I may be wrong with that, because if you got that far without reading the book, what's the point? You already saw the Red Wedding. It's not. All right, first three seasons. Who do you think gave the best performance?
The first three seasons?
Yeah, and I'm not saying through first three seasons, but which character in which season do you think was the best performance of these three seasons? Anybody, actor or actress. Just one performance.
Jamie Lannister.
Yeah?
Season 3. You like Costa Waldo.
Wow.
I like his performance in that.
It is really good. Especially considering you don't get much of him in season 1 or season 2. But somehow he's already evolved as a character. Like, he's able to display that.
It's cool. His past. It's his persona. Yeah. It's his arrogance in those two seasons that you already know enough of him.
It's larger than life. It precedes him.
Yeah. He wants that, like, you know, because the fear of the name Jimmy Lannister, it's kind of like, you know, Tywin Tyrion season 1, you know, book 1. Like, okay, Lysa Tully.
Oh, right. The
I'll kill my brother.
Yeah.
Jimmy Lannister right now. She knew right away. Jimmy Lannister. No, we're not waiting for Jimmy. We're doing this right now.
I knew you were going to go there, but we're actually not.
Canceling that lifeline right now. That lifeline is shut.
I might have to agree with you. I might have to agree with you with Nikolai Costa Waldo. Because I'm trying to think who I had named for the last couple seasons. And I mean, Dinklage did great. Ned was great, but he's Sean Bean. He's like that most movies. Nothing wrong with that. Best actors make a character themselves and vice versa. I think I agree with you. Yeah. Which character do you think most benefited from a television adaptation?
Major or minor? Season 3.
Yeah.
At that point, up to season 3, I'm going to say Emilia Clarke.
Really? Why do you say that?
I mean, you're talking about benefited from being in that show?
Not having to do with the actor or actress.
But you're the character.
Which character in the first three books was better represented in the show than in the book? Like, which character?
Oh, Jamie's up there.
You think so?
Yeah.
Not for me, because I just Jamie's Storm of Swords chapters.
Because you love Jamie too much. Yeah. That's the problem.
Like, yeah. Not too close to it.
Right.
Tyrion, I think, is an even swap. Ned, I think, is an even swap. Rob, I think, is even better? Swap.
I think I'm going to say Cersei Lannister. They love her on the show.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you might be right again. I was going to say Bronn.
Yeah, but he's more of a side.
He's a side character, but that's just it. Like he was barely in Feast for Crows or Dance of Dragons, but he's still featured prominently because that character is so popular. But you might be right with Cersei because Cersei, you hate her. I mean, I know you still hate her on the TV show, but it's harder. It's harder to hate her. Just like how Lena Headey plays that character so much. Oh, you like Cersei Lannister? Well, I got one word for you.
Lady. Lady. I'm your knight in shining armor.
Do you think you realize at this point how little the direwolves were going to play into the overall story?
No. I thought, okay, season 1, 2, 3, okay, maybe you got money problems.
Right. They'll get a better budget.
Right.
Rob's dead. Garvin's dead. Surely Summer, Ghost, and...
Right. Nothing.
No.
Nothing.
Although we have to see Nymeria again, I would think. It's not going to be enough to make up for what they've done to them.
That's the thing I guarantee they'll probably tease it with and just get one little shot.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Like when the series is over, they'll just show Nymeria in the woods. Worst translation from book to screen. Which character is worse because of the TV show?
Danny. Up until season 3?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, if I'm not including Dance of Dragons.
Yeah.
Her stuff in books 1 and 2 are good. 3, so I'm going to go with Danny in my initial thoughts, unless you can come up with something else.
Okay. See, the only thing with Emilia Clarke is I think I prefer Danny seasons 1, 2, 3 to Danny. I think by season 4, I'm like, all right, whatever.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I'm saying book,
you're onto something, because there is... Danny's, for me, I think for most people that read the books, Emilia Clarke's Danny's, while they don't dislike Emilia Clarke, but the Game of Thrones Danny, Khaleesi, kind of takes away from her, how much her character's loved in the book. It does damage that character to have a TV version of it. But I wouldn't say that for 1, 2, 3. I'd say for the series, Danny, far and away. But I think for seasons 1, 2, and 3, I think she was all right. I think I would say I think I'd have to go with Stannis. Season 3 Stannis is just...
Yeah, true.
Really bad, man. Really bad.
And that was another character, almost close to like how Theon was, where did you have to just put him in there just to put him in there?
Who's that? Stannis. Yeah.
Could have taken him out. Didn't even need him. Could have raided pack season 4.
Yeah, you're right. Won't play that game for a minute. Which characters, season 1, 2, 3, did you not need at all? I mean, season 1, obviously, Roz. Roz, you don't need Roz, obviously.
That Roz, season 2, 1, 2, 3, Roz.
But I also think that season 3, you don't need Theon. We said that before. We don't need Stannis. You just said that. I'm prone to agree with you. Or if you do, just do like a 1 episode with Stannis and Melisandre instead of trying to stretch this shit out where it doesn't make any sense. I'm trying to think of season 2. I don't think there was anybody that we could have done without, but I just think that the pacing of season 2 was all off, where it was trying to fit everybody into each episode when you could have just done quality episodes and have characters in less episodes. At this point, after season 3, we've finished airing. I know you don't like Littlefinger, but did you appreciate the Littlefinger book character or the TV character more?
By a book.
Barry's.
Definitely book. Up until season 3, I think Barry's is okay. I think it's only until when I was rewatch, I was watching season 5 and him and Tyrion out there and after the White Rings just...
Buddy road trip.
Season 6 only is like a community,
Well, it's just because that then that's only like you had a sneaking suspicion that that's what he was. Not quite comic relief, but not dangerous. Not like he is in the books. Mm-hmm. And he just confirms that with season 5. He's not dangerous. He's just there to help out Danny. He's a good guy. And I don't like Varys as a good guy. I don't like it. I don't really like anybody as a good guy. That's what's so attractive about A Song of Ice and Fire is there's no real good guy. Ned. Even Ned does some things that are questionable. Everybody's got these shades of gray. And as you get to know the characters and you identify with why they do the things they do, then they can become a good guy in your eyes if you identify with it. But with the show, it's not that's not something they can do. You need to have good guys and bad guys. And Barry's, I was kind of hoping that he was a bad guy. I was kind of hoping he was going to kill Grandmaster Picel, and that would mean you'd have a young Griff, and it wasn't going to work out that way. So you go the opposite way with Barry's, and I'm okay with the reason they did it. I still like the TV character of Barry's. I do. I enjoy it. But the book Barry's and book Littlefinger are two amazing characters. Just getting hints of what they're up to. But when you get those hints, you see the scope of their planning, and it's like, holy shit, how is that going to play into the end of this? I forget, the dragons in season 3, they weren't super large in season 3.
No, they weren't.
Enough to burn the Great Masters, but they weren't huge. You get any final words for season 3 of Game of Thrones?
No, not that much. It's just kind of a disappointing season.
Yeah, I feel like you were more disappointed with season 2 because I think you thought it was better. Like, I remember you saying after you rewatched season 3 that it wasn't what you remembered. You didn't like it that much. And I was like, it can't be that bad. But yeah, it is. It's that bad. But season 4, I'm confident. While it may not be night and day with season 3, it's a lot different. And I think season 5 is going to end up being the season where I hated it at first, but now probably one of my more favorite seasons.
Really?
You know? I mean, I think so. There's no way I'm going to like it less than season 2 and season 3. Knowing what happens and not having the ability for that to disappoint me.
Yeah, I guess as right now, I'm still 6-1-4-5-2-3.
That's about all we got on season 3. We're going to come back at you next week with season 4. We're halfway through the series review now.
Right. Yeah, I think it's funny with season 4. I think that's the season where people started to really focus in on John.
Yeah. Yes.
Ned's dead, Rob's dead. Right. It's John. It's got to be this war of the battle. He's got to be somewhere.
Well, I think it'll be interesting because you kind of have a few stories that started in season 1 that end with season 3. And it'll be interesting to see a new cycle start up and see if that's the case starting with season 4, going to season 6 or beyond. But as of now, how Stark's defeated. And that's the important thing to know going. And we'll talk about it, but that's the whole point of that cold open for season 4.
Right.
Tywin melting down ice.
It's that scene, and then it's the scene where Roose gives Ramsay the north.
That's a great scene.
And they go to Winterfell.
And don't they play the Winterfell theme? Or King of the North or something. They play a Stark theme.
Right. And it just kind of squishes your insides. What I want to do, I want to watch that episode again and then just watch the flag, the Direwolf flag going back down with the Felon from season 6.
Yeah.
Just watch that and get all that anguish all of a sudden.
I still think that felt a little anticlimactic, and I think that's what they were going for. But I'm going to watch season 6 again. I haven't yet. Did 4. I did 5. I didn't even finish 5. Anyway, that's what we got. We'll see you guys next week for season 4. You can drop us a line. Hit us up on Twitter at Princess Promised. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/The Promised Princes. You can read our essays and blogs and whatnot on theprincesthatwerepromised.wordpress.com, princesthatwerepromised.tumblr.com, and visit our webpage, thepromisedprinces.actionpackpodcast.com. Please leave a review, iTunes, Google, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcast. Leave a review for The Princes That Were Promised. The more reviews you leave, the more likely other people can find us, and the more likely we get to retire from our middle management jobs. John, always a pleasure, and we'll speak with you guys next time.